Hey, you. Want access to exclusive secret ops intel? Check out the link in the description.
We don't just find the patches and have a Leaning Tower of Pisa, but we try to make the building stand back up again.
Welcome to Secret Ops, the podcast uncovering the world of operations one episode at a time. I'm your host, Ariana Caffone, and today's guest is Erica Jujo, Business Optimization Specialist. So, the title is badass, but the question is, what does a Business Optimization Specialist actually do? We dive into that question, as well as what is it like to ideate and apply and to actually get a patent? That is a fascinating discussion, and I love her idea. So let's jump in. So can you break down what you do and how that manifests in working with different businesses?
Ariana, thank you so much for having me on the show. And
of course.
And essentially what I do is, and what a business optimization specialist does in my specific capacity, is I help businesses save on their expenses in 90 days or less. Now, when I first got into the role, I came from the marketing world. And a big thing that I noticed is people would come to me for marketing, which I think is a very important aspect to growing and scaling your business. But if you don't have those operational pieces in place, or there's some cracks in the foundation, anything that we do for you, or some of those pieces that we do for you, sometimes it becomes a leaky bucket. So if you don't have those systems and processes in place, and I'll use, let's say, a plumber, for example, if I generate leads and you don't pick up the phone and someone has an emergency with a leak under their sink, they're going to call the next guy. So that's essentially what I do, is I look at businesses holistically and try to find ways where we don't just find the patches and have a Leaning Tower of Pisa, but we try to make the building stand back up again.
The interesting part is, you are working within industries like construction, utilities, like in that world where processes, if they are broken, can really mean some big things. If their business is in the physical world, but their processes sometimes are in the digital world, how do you bridge that gap?
So you're being very generous by saying that a lot of them have processes. So they go to school and they focus on learning how to pour the concrete, how to bricklay, you know, they're focused on the skill. But the problem is when you go to sometimes a trade school, you go to school for those X amount of years and then you do your apprentice or your co-op, and then you know nothing about business. Or, you know, some things, you're taking it over from somebody, and oftentimes they're using Excel sheets. Some of them still have pieces of paper and pen. The other gap too is they start at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 in the morning, they go get all their gear, they're starting up, they finish, they have a long day. I wouldn't want to be working on my books at the end of the day. So,
no way.
The other piece of it is people on the ground, and this is any business, because I was also a waitress for 8 years. People that are at the operational level, and then the managerial level, and then you have the top of the food chain. The top of the food chain, or the middle management, will sometimes filter what top management wants to hear. And it's the same thing in construction. Mm. So we found out one time that we looked at telecom, and this one particular contracting company had 4 phones for each employee and 1 phone for each job site. And we're like, why, like, what's going on here? Why does everyone need 4 phones? That's such a waste, because one person did not talk to the other person. So there's a communication gap, a process gap. Then finance doesn't know what's going on. They just look at the books and go, okay, yeah, let's go. Like, and each of these phones, they're in Canada, our phone plans are not cheap. So if you have each phone, that's worth between $80 to $100, and each person has 4 of them, and you times that by each employee, you know, that's like almost $400 a month.
Fascinating. And the interesting part is, so I am also a financial books nerd, meaning operationally, I want to like get into the books and ask a million questions. And I'm that annoying person that's like, well, why do you have this? And why do we do this? But it's very hard sometimes to piece together the human decision that went behind the line item in your expenses. And it sounds like a lot of what you're doing is working backwards. So you have the line of data and it seems weird. And then you have to go through so many people to figure out why in order to make a change. So how do you train people up in bridging that knowledge? And also, how do you deal with those like resistant folk?
So I bring somebody in to look at that process and figure out, what do we need? Why aren't we using it? What's been stopping them? Are they trained on it? I look at the process as a whole. Now, for some folks that are resistant to it, we have to find out why. One of the things I've learned, especially if an acquisition is coming in or you're merging companies, when you're in that deal, it's better if you don't bring up the technology piece. Bring it up after the fact, because they start freaking out.
Why?
In that process.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Is it a freak out because it's like, oh, I have to learn this new thing? Or is it a freak out in it's going to expose that we don't have like a process for this? Like, where do you think the freak out comes from?
I think the freak out comes from people that have been in a business and owned it for 60 years, put their life into it. And then someone comes in and they want somebody that's passionate. But then when people come in and say, hey, I'm going to change this, 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 and this, the owners are also looking at, how is this person going to take over? So you've got to be careful with that change. Now, how I present it is not necessarily on the features, but rather the ROI. When you start presenting the time, the currency, and the transformation, that's when it's easier to translate. I also think too, sometimes when I'm looking at expenses, especially in construction and in restaurants, they don't like us looking at their operations or their books because they have what's on their books and sometimes what's not on the books. Mm. So I tell them, snitches get stitches. I'm not here for that. We go on our merry way.
It sounds like when you're stepping into businesses, these businesses have been around forever and they've worked their butts off to grow it and to maintain it. I mean, when you think about how many businesses don't exist after a year or two, imagine decades, you know, old businesses, they've had to do so much to survive. And then we like wake up in 2025 and you and I come in and say, you got to do this. You got to do this. You got to do this. What about this? Oh, you haven't done this. It must be so overwhelming. And what you said really struck home with me personally is, what are those like metrics that will unlock the future for them? Is it a monetary method? Is it a time method? Is it like, what does your day, perfect day look like? Is it a, hey, this is your goal that you've had. Here's how we get here. But really listening and asking the questions to understand at the end of the day, what is the human need there? And not just like, okay, we need to make the business more profitable, but like, do you want to sell this business so you can retire? Do you want to grow this business? Do you want this to run automatically so you don't have to think about it? There's the like business formality want. And then there's that at a human level, like, what do you dream about at night? And what do you hope for your life? And that's so important to identify. And sometimes it can be hard for people to really open up to you to say, you know, this is what I envision. Like, yeah, I have this business, but when I get old and gray, I want to own a coffee shop and I want to just have the money to be able to do that, right? Like, there's the little kid dreams that people have. How do you build those relationships in order to understand that and to get to that like personal level with them?
Understanding their intrinsic value, or finding their distinctive value that makes them different other than their business. So for example, Some people will say, I want to play golf on Fridays. So when you relate things to outside of their role, it's easier to come back and say, okay, so if you want to do this on Fridays, or you want to spend more time with your kids, or you actually want to see them play baseball and not be on your phone the whole time, here's what we need to implement.
What are three things folks can action to start to begin looking into the business from an optimization lens? Where would you have them start?
I think where you can find the biggest savings and where people often do not look, if you're using merchant services, so anything that requires a credit card, and especially if it's digital, go back and revisit it and look at every single line item. There's a reason why interchange fees are so high. And it's not just because, okay, you're using it in your establishment, but let's say you're doing only transactions in the US or only in Canada. Go and find the line item where it has a global fee. Why are you paying a global fee if you're only doing business within the country? That's something that you can remove already. Second thing is have a look at your terminals. How old are they? What are you using? What is it accommodating? Also think of yourself in the consumer perspective. So sometimes I'll get people complaining saying, hey, people are coming in and they're using their Black credit cards. The merchant has to pay for them to use that card. So consider that. The third piece I would also say is, when you initially start a business, and I did this too when I started my marketing agency in the beginning, you go for the things that you know, which is, let's say, Stripe. It's great when you're starting out, but everything is pretty high in comparison to some of the other ones. Look to see what else is out there. Yes, they have a lot of integrations, but if you know what you're doing or you have a team and you watch a couple YouTube videos, there's ways to see, okay, I can, you know, put this code into the website and all I have to do is this, this, and this. And you'd be surprised what you can negotiate down and also what you can get back. So that's one of the biggest ones. We have sometimes, depending on the company, per year, they'll get back 100K just in those fees. It's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. That makes me so upset. Because a lot of the times these businesses, let's say 100K, that's a big part of their revenue coming in. That's not like a small chunk of their revenue. Even when I have people pay invoices for my consulting, even I'm like, they did nothing with this transaction. Why are they getting this amount? So just essentially questioning it and saying, why is it that thing? And how can I do better on this? And spending the time to really figure that out.
Yes. And then especially if you have an e-commerce business or a product-based business, that interchange fee, it's better if you get it down, because you have to sometimes, you got to incorporate that into the price of the product. And now with everything going up with inflation, how much more can you say to a customer? We're going to increase this by another 22%. People start freaking out.
And I feel like a lot of times I come into a business and maybe they've already said, you know, listen, we've gone through our operating expenses. We've gotten rid of everything that we don't use. And then I'll say, can I go and take a look anyways and kind of like see what's going on? It's amazing how you can have a business that's death by a thousand cuts. And then by streamlining all of that, all of a sudden you've got a bunch of money that you can actually do something with. Because again, if you're looking externally at what you and I do, it's all these small tweaks, all these questions, all of these little things, but you've got to look at the big picture, and we have to be able to tell the story of the bigger picture to get people to understand, which is, there's a beauty in that. I love being able to, it's the coolest thing to see people have that light bulb moment, you know? So one last question before we do some rapid fire questions about you. Okay, I got to ask. So you went through the patent process, and I was so curious. I went and actually looked up patent records. And then I got extra excited because your patent was on a cosmetic brush system. And I'm like, man, only an operations nerd would like figure out a system for way of interchanging brushes. Can you talk us through where this came from, what the patent process was like, and what you hope to potentially do with it in the future?
Absolutely. So when I was 21, this was when I graduated for the first time in university. And I realized at that time, I don't think I want to become an employee. I want to become an employer and I want to do big things. And I have big dreams. And my first business book I ever read was Invent It, Bank It, Sell It by Laura Grenier. So she's the lady, the blonde lady on Shark Tank. And she said, find things around your house that are a problem and turn it into a solution. And she said, when you start talking with other people about this particular problem, if it's also a problem for them, you've got a solution. So I remember at the time buying a new set of makeup brushes, and then the water seeped in, so the glue kind of came out a little bit. And then when I started to put it back in, it didn't fit correctly. And so I said, you know what? This would be good, because ever since I can remember when I was 13, whether you have dollar store brushes or MAC makeup brushes, where they're like $90 per brush, the minute that water gets to that piece, sometimes it's game over. So I solved that problem by making it detach and it kind of screws in like a hose. Then I was thinking to myself, okay, we're going to wash these brushes. So you wash your brush and then sometimes you just leave it on the counter, but then it doesn't dry properly. So I created like a ring on the inside that was magnetic so you could hang it on your mirror. Then I looked at it and I said, oh, but there's makeup that gets stuck at the top where the bristles are. That's where all the bacteria hides. Let's make like little holes so that when you're washing it, it would be like a hose. So I did that. And then the last piece of it is I put lines on the handle so you know where to hold it for certain applications. And then of course, and you can move it to different brushes. So when you're traveling or if you're a makeup artist, you don't have like this full set that you also have to carry with all your foundations and everything else. So that's kind of how it came to be. Then I said, okay, I gotta get a patent lawyer, went there, got a prototype. They did a big search. So I found 9 patents that were similar. They found, I think it was 27. So I had to tweak a few things. We went back and forth a little bit. And then 2 years later, it was patented in the US.
The coolest part about that is I feel like we all have that moment where we're like, why doesn't this exist? I need this thing. And why doesn't it exist? I love that at that time. And also being so young, you're like, I'm going to make it exist. So all of those tiny pieces then equal this really interesting patent. Now, once you went through that whole process of filing the patent, getting the patent, what I guess are the next steps and where do you want to take it? Or is it just like almost a thought experiment to be able to get that up and running?
So I put it on hold because at that particular time when everything was done, it was the pandemic and nobody was wearing makeup then. I was like, this is the shittiest time to launch this thing. So I think the next piece for me would probably be to get it into those incubator programs and get as much funding as I can and just go, 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 go. But I've also noticed if you go to Europe, they pump so much money towards fashion and beauty versus here in Canada. Or I would have to go to LA or San Francisco where that's like a hub. So I'd say that would be the next piece to understand that space and get it out to market.
I also just want to put my like selfish, like, Erica, I need this problem solved with my makeup brushes, which is I usually only have 1 or 2 makeup brushes and I want to be able to change out the middle of the makeup brush, but I also want to be able to make the makeup brush two-sided. So like when I travel, I want to be able to put brushes on either side. And then when I'm at home, I only want a brush on one side. I'll leave that in your very capable hands to figure out at some point in time. But that's my dream.
So you know what? I have to look. It's been a while since I looked at the actual. It's like 16 pages, but I think there is a drawing in there with one on with two sided. I think.
Please, I'm excited to see where that goes. It has come to the wrap-up moment where we're going to ask you some rapid-fire questions about you as a human being, even though I think we got a good peek into your brain with that last question. So I'm just going to throw them your way and you answer them as they come. So the first one is, what is your favorite part of the day?
My favorite part of the day is the morning when I'm having my espresso, because that's the only time that I have to myself.
Oh my gosh.
10 minutes. And I could just sit there and just drink my espresso and nobody's allowed to bother me.
There's nothing like the smell too, when it hits you, that espresso smell. So perfect. What is something that makes you little kid happy?
You know what? Something actually that made me little kid happy yesterday was I recommended somebody to a podcast where they could advertise, and just seeing connections come through and people working together makes me happy. But just seeing people work together and collaborating, I get so excited.
Yeah. It's a special thing. You feel like you played matchmakers with like friends. What is the most important lesson you've learned so far in your life?
I know this sounds so cliche, but just do it. Because if you don't do it now, when will you do it in the future?
Last question is, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Me too.
So I would say I want to be able to have multiple businesses. That's what I want to be. And I want to be not just an influencer, but to be able to impact other people and also help them achieve that. And I think as I talk to more and more people, I have other businesses as well. I've started them. I just go and do it. But it goes back to the gym thing. You know, I'll tell someone, hey, I did this, and this, but then they don't know how to do it. And so one day I do want to get to that level where I can help them and bring even more people in to get them from point A to point B.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Erica, thank you so much for coming on to Secret Ops. If people are listening to our conversation and they want to learn more about you and what you do, where can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Erica Jujo, or just give me a ring at 416-605-0193. I promise. I am a millennial, but I do pick up the phone. I promise.
That's a bold thing. I'm impressed. I'm like, text me and I'll get back to you in a week. I'm just kidding. Erica, thank you so much. Secret Ops listeners, thank you so much for listening to Secret Ops. Remember to subscribe wherever you find your podcast, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Hey, listener. Do you want to be a top operator in business and in life? Well, we at Secret Ops are here to help you do just that. Check out our monthly Secret Ops newsletter with exclusive intel just for you. From bonus content to secret resources, we've given you the VIP access. To sign up, check out the link in the description. And as always, thanks for listening.